Code Talker, Disc 2.
Chapter 8. New Recruits. Meanwhile, the interviews to find that first group of Navajos for special duty were going on. 2 weeks passed before they had finally chosen all the men they wanted for that first group, 29 in all. Each man was physically examined at Fort Defiance Public Health Service and carefully questioned to be sure he was really able to speak both Navajo and English fluently. Each man's age was checked, too. No one over 32 or under 17 was supposed to be accepted. But one of those chosen, Carl Gorman, was actually 35, although he listed his age as 32. Another man, William Yazzie, was only 16, but said he was a year older. All through this period of selection, no one was told what the special duty would be. Early on the morning of May 4, 1942, those 29 men of what would be the first all-Navajo platoon, the 382nd, boarded a bus at Fort Defiance. Some of their friends and families watched as that bus headed southeast in the direction of Tzotzil, Mount Taylor, the sacred peak that marks the southern boundary of Denetka. Then they were gone, vanished. It was as if they had fallen off the face of the earth, for no word was heard from them. Not a single letter was received by any of their families who had been left behind. A month passed, and then another month. Now their families back home were getting worried. Some knew a little bit about the armed forces from having served in World War I. After 6 weeks of boot camp, new recruits are always given a 10-day pass. But not one of those 29 men came home on leave, and there were still no letters. Wilsey Bitsey's father was a schoolteacher. His son had promised to keep him informed of how he was doing. Carl Gorman's father was influential in the politics of our tribe and a successful businessman. Both Mr. Bitsey and Mr. Gorman decided to do something. They wrote directly to the Marines and complained to the Indian agent. They expected answers, but when those answers came, they were not very satisfactory. All they were told was that their sons were doing well. But they were on special duty and couldn't communicate with anyone. After a while, when no one had heard anything from those first 29 Navajos, people began making jokes about what must have happened to them. One joke was that the white men must have eaten them. When someone said that to me, knowing how much I still wanted to be a Marine myself, I had an answer for them. "Well," I said, "I have always wanted to see what it was like in a Balagana kitchen." Those jokes finally stopped 4 months later when one of those 29 men suddenly reappeared at Fort Defiance. When he had left, we had simply known him as Johnny Manuelito. He had graduated from Navajo High School several years before and was still remembered there as a serious and hardworking student. Now, he was a different man. He was Corporal Johnny Manuelito of the 382nd, and he wore the bright, impressive uniform of a U.S. Marine. The other Navajo men of the first 29 had been sent on assignment overseas, but he and John Benali, another member of the Navajo 382nd, had been given a different job. They were staying on as instructors for the next group of Navajo recruits. Johnny Manuelito's duty was to recruit from our eastern half of the big Navajo reservation. He did so in style, wearing his spotless new corporal's uniform as he spoke on street corners and in chapter houses. People were impressed, not just by his words, but by how he looked. Those who had known him before said that he truly seemed to be a different person. He looked to have grown taller during the short time he was gone, and he carried himself more like a white man than an Indian. When he came to our high school and spoke to the student body, his words reverberated in my mind like drumbeats. "The Marines," he said, "are the best of the best. We are always the first to fight. Our motto is Semper Fidelis, always faithful." He looked like an eagle staring down from a high mountain crag as his eyes swept over his audience of odd young Navajo men. "Soon you may be called up to fight by the draft. If that happens, you will not be able to choose which branch of the armed forces to join. If you make your decision now, you can be sure that you will join the proud and few and become a Marine." I was thrilled by his words and by the way he looked. I had never seen any Navajo who stood up so straight in the presence of important white men, like our principal and several businessmen who sat behind him on the stage as he spoke. They were intent on his every word. He carried himself with such self-assurance and pride that even those big Biliganas were impressed. When his talk was over, I quietly made my way up to the front to listen to more of what he had to say. I didn't ask him any questions, but listened closely as he spoke. He believed that any Navajo joining up would have a better chance of getting through boot camp than your average Biligana. His own platoon had been the first ever all-Indian platoon in the history of the Marines, and his instructors hadn't known what to expect, but the Navajos had surprised them all. "In boot," Johnny Manalito said, "a good many of those average men who hope to be Marines can't stand up to the physical challenges." He swung his hand to one side in a dismissive gesture. "They wash out. It's too hard for your average man to get used to marching long distances and carrying heavy packs, to running and climbing obstacles. It is too difficult to be brave in the face of gunfire. In most recruit platoons, there are even men who have never held a gun." When he said that, some of us turned to look at each other. It was hard to believe that anyone, man or woman, could grow up to adulthood without ever having used a gun. Every one of us carried a rifle when we hunted to provide food for our families, or when we were out at sheep camp and had to protect our herds from creatures that might hurt them. "Do you know how many of the 29 men in our platoon washed out?" Johnny Manuelito asked us. "Not even one." I wasn't surprised. Those things that he said a Marine recruit needed to learn were part of our everyday Navajo life back then. We were used to walking great distances over hard terrain while carrying things. We would stay out with our herds of sheep overnight, and in the worst weather. Going for 2 or 3 days without eating was not unusual for us, even those of us who had gone off to boarding school. I didn't sign up that day, but my mind was made up. Even though I was now 16, and even though I was still small for my age, I knew in my heart that it was my time to serve as a warrior. I would wear a beautiful uniform and go to see strange places. I would wait no longer. Soon, very soon, I would finally become a Marine.